Welcome back to We Do the Heavy Lifting. I'm your host, Dr. Jenna Yentis, and today we do therapeutic techniques. What do I mean by this? Well, when Michael Phelps showed up to an Olympics with bruises all over his back, little round bruises, everybody was very curious about this. When I went to the PT and they stuck these little needles in my muscles, I was very curious about what that was. So today we're going to talk about cupping and, if we have the time, dry needling. And I'm really excited about our expert that we have today. It's Dr. Sherry Walters. She's one of the assistant athletic directors at Texas A&M Athletics. She is also the director and oversees all of the athletic training and physical therapy for what we call Olympic sports. And she brings to us a wealth of knowledge from experiences all over the world. You have worked with Olympics, Paralympics, the Air Force, national collegiate sports. You've worked in the U.S. and other countries. You've had quite the life. So I am excited to learn about all things cupping and dry needling today. So what are these weird bruises that people are walking around with?
Well, Doc, they're hickeys. And it's essentially what it is. It's using a device to, and there's a bunch of different versions or types of devices, but it's using some sort of device to create a suction. And so in traditional Chinese medicine, they would originally use animal horns and then progress to glass over time and now more plastic type materials. But there's different types of cupping. You can use a vacuum, so a pump, for example, to suck the air out of a plastic container usually, or if it's glass, they'll do fire. So they will literally take a piece of cotton, put alcohol on it, light it, stick it in there, create a suction, take that out, hopefully, and put the cup on someone. But if you Google image it, you can bring up all sorts of really disturbing photos of even burns. And then there's also a type called wet cupping, where they'll actually make a small incision and apply the suction and draw blood, almost like medieval days leeching. But typically what you'll see in the U.S., especially with the sport teams, is dry cupping, using a plastic cup to create that suction. From a true medical standpoint and a research standpoint, we don't even really know for sure if it even works, or if it does, the true mechanism for how it is working. Okay. But there's a lot of different theories about it, including increasing blood flow to the area to help your body naturally heal better. So that's the bruising that you see. Or if, for example, if you like massage, that is a compression technique, a manual technique using compression to help the tissues relax. And it may be a true issue with the actual tissue, the actual muscle, to force it to relax, or it could be more of a neurological thing. So we know from research that just human touch will help us to relax, and there's positive health benefits to just making contact with someone. Or in the case of cupping, it could be the actual act of bringing the tissue up and decompressing the tissue. But more and more people are thinking that it's more related to the actual ring around the cup causing a compression. And so it's a mechanical transduction. So a lot of the techniques that you'll see now, like the scraping, and so using different tools, now mainly stainless steel, but back in traditional Chinese medicine, they would use bones to scrape the tissue, and it's really deep massage, same thing, different mechanical transduction. And so from a modality standpoint, the shockwave therapies, so using a device to make that tapping, is the same sort of mechanism that is potentially in play with those.
So you've used a word a couple of times. I want to make sure our reader or listeners know what you're saying. Mechanical transduction, what does that mean?
Yep.
In the easiest way possible.
So applying pressure and changing the electrical fields, and again, okay, to help with the tissue healing, the body's own natural ability to heal itself. Okay. And so using the cups and the pressure from them to create a stimulus for a healing effect.
Okay. And like she said, it changes the electrical, and if you've listened to our podcast in the past, you know that the muscles work off electricity. So we're all electrical here.
Yep.
So I have a question. We didn't quite talk about it before, but it brings up something I think that you'll be easily to answer. So you said it brings blood flow. It potentially, one of the mechanisms is bringing blood flow, but I've always been told to put ice on something. So, and you're laughing at me because you're probably, it's very, I don't want to use the word controversial right now, but it is being debated. Is there a time that you should encourage blood flow versus a time that you should restrict?
Yep. So it is kind of a hot topic. And so, for example, historically, if someone had an acute injury, so a fresh injury like an ankle sprain, we would do what would be referred to as like the PRICE method. So protection, rest, ice, compression, and elevation. From a protection standpoint, more of a relative protection usually. And so that whole ice piece of it has been debated more and more. And again, lots of times we don't know. Yeah. But from a true healing standpoint, going into, for example, with ankle injuries and how they frequently happen over and over again, some of the thought processes is if we put ice on the area, it will decrease blood flow and inhibit the true body's ability to heal itself. And so the ligament doesn't heal like we would want it to. Same thing if we took NSAIDs, so Advil, ibuprofen, it influences the body's ability to heal itself. And so then we end up with these like chronic ankle instabilities because the tissues haven't healed appropriately. And so for someone that doesn't have to be able to run, jump, cut in a timely fashion, it may actually be better not to ice that ankle, let it swell, let the body splint and protect itself to allow it to heal better on its own. But for those of us that work in a time frame in a high performance environment where we have to get someone back on the field quickly, then that starts to play into some of our decisions that we make. But for example, now after a rotator cuff repair surgery, back in the day, they would prescribe several different types of NSAIDs and then a lot of ice to help the person not have pain following that surgical technique. Now they recommend that people don't do any of those things because we want the tissue to heal better and be less likely to have a re-tear later.
It kind of makes sense, right? Because your body has a natural mechanism, and so
sometimes it's best not to mess with it.
Absolutely. So let's go back to cupping, and in what cases or when do you currently use this as a treatment modality, and you know, or have you, and in what cases?
Yep. So again, it becomes a hot button topic. In our environment, we don't charge our athletes for the services that we provide them. And there is some research that would suggest long-term following an injury that these techniques actually don't enhance outcomes. They don't long-term do not improve outcomes. And so if you're going to a facility where you're having to pay a fee for these services, that it may not be worth your money to do it. But again, when we're trying to move quickly, and if someone is having pain or needing help in a recovery fashion, if we can do these types of techniques that some people would maybe consider alternative to Western medicine, if we can do these to help decrease their symptoms so I can help them to exercise and improve their strength as an example, or be able to make it through a practice or be able to play in a game, then there's benefit of that and there's no cost associated with it. And these types of techniques, like sometimes people will say, well, it's just a placebo effect. Well, it may be. I might be able to just put my hand on them and give them an encouraging word and it have the same
effect.
But ultimately, lots of times it comes down to what a person likes the best. And research has shown that if a patient or an athlete has some say in their treatment, that they're better, more likely to get better quicker. And so different people like different things. Some people like the cupping. Some people prefer needling. Some people prefer soft tissue massage. Some people like all of the pretty hot pink KT tape that we might put on someone. Research is up in the air on all those things. They have a very similar potential effect with that mechanical transduction. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter if it helps them to perform at a very high level on the field or the court.
It makes a lot of sense. And for people, the KT tape is the kinesio tape, and you see a lot of athletes playing with it on.
Yep.
And of course, there's research goes both ways on it. I've read it, and it's up in the air.
And most things point now to if it has a positive influence, it's probably either placebo or potentially this mechanotransduction.
Perfect. So then maybe we're going to have time to talk about dry needling, which is one of my favorites. So not to steal your thunder, but I went to the physical therapist. They stuck the needle in, and being who I am, I was like, how does this work? And he was like, stop it, Jenna, stop it. Like, I went to class. I know how to do it. I'm not... It was very fun. And then I went and searched about it and came back and I was like, this is what it is. I'm the best patient ever.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm the patient nobody wants. So can you explain a little bit what dry needling is for those that may not have had the, or are familiar?
Yep. So in the U.S., it's called typically within the medical community, the Western medicine community, trigger point dry needling. They use the exact same needle as an acupuncture needle, but the philosophy behind it is different. So traditional Chinese medicine, the needles are placed based on meridians relative to a person's qi, but they've been doing this for 5,000 years, and they didn't have necessarily the same terminology that we do in terms of nerves, as an example. So what we now know is these traditional Chinese medicine acupuncture points, 70% of them are actually on a nerve. And so from a Western medicine philosophy, it makes a lot of sense. They figured a lot of things out over the years of practicing this technique. But in the U.S., it's not based on qis or meridians. It's based on the nerves, typically like a trigger point. So where a nerve enters a muscle belly, so the ones most people think about is the knot that they get in their shoulders. And so if we poke around on that, we can find a very sore spot where that nerve inserts into that upper trap muscle. And so for me, if I was going to try to work on that for a patient or an athlete, for me to really truly release that, I'm going to need to stick my thumb or probably my elbow into that and hold that pressure consistently for about 15 minutes in hopes of getting that muscle to relax. And so the benefits of that muscle relaxing is it allows blood flow into the area. It allows the body to heal itself, sort of like with the cupping. And so it helps when the blood flow comes in, it gets all that lactic acid out of there, it helps desensitize the nerve, and again, helps the body heal itself from a tissue standpoint. And so the way I explain it to the athletes, if you got a knot and you take this little baby knife, little needle, and stick it in there, it forces those muscle fibers to relax and allows the blood flow into the area. Same thing from a mechanism standpoint. Researchers aren't really for sure of how it's functioning, how it's working, but that's kind of the common thought, is it's desensitizing that nerve and helps relieve the pain that way.
So are you kind of mentioned it, so they're not really sure how it's working. Is it, in your opinion, I guess, professional opinion, do you think it's more of a placebo? Is there actually something, you know, acupuncture has worked and for 5,000 years? Or
yeah, so the first time I ever saw it, I thought the therapist that was doing it, who was after a flight with her own TMJ, I was there for an interview, a job interview. I saw her needling her own face, and I was like, this woman is crazy, and what am I doing? Still thought it was a placebo effect until different than even just true into the muscle. I saw her treat an athlete that had a lot of swelling in their knees, so that she wasn't going into a trigger point. She was actually going into the joint itself, and within a couple of hours over his lunch break, the swelling was completely gone. So for me, you can get rid of pain through a placebo effect. It's very difficult to get rid of swelling from a placebo effect, especially in that time frame. And so in certain cases, it's one of the most effective ways that I've seen us get rid of swelling at any modality. It will do it incredibly quickly under the right circumstances. So for me, that's not a placebo effect. So there has to be something going on. And then the ways that I've treated myself. So the continuing ed that I took, they teach you how to treat yourself, because if you're not feeling well, it's hard to take care of other people. I tend to get really bad sinus infections, especially in this hot, humid environment. And so we were taught how to needle our own face to help with our own sinuses. And so I will frequently do that. It works better than any medication I've ever used. And then I also felt it for myself from a pain standpoint. I was trying to train for a marathon. I thought I had shin splints, and also the world's worst patient myself. I thought I had shin splints. I was like, I'm going to put some needles in there. It relieved it really well. All of my pain was gone until the next day my leg swelled largely, because of what happened is I actually had a stress fracture, and that muscle was on and guarding to help splint and protect the stress fracture. And when I had released that muscle tension that was there naturally to help me try to heal myself, I released that muscle tension, my stress fracture revealed itself. So there's been a couple times where I really noticed personally like the effects of it. And so again, I don't know for sure why it works, but maybe it is all in my head, but maybe at this point it doesn't matter.
Very true. And I gotta say, she has certifications and licenses to stick needles and things. So at home, please don't try sticking needles in your shin splints and those types of things. Go see a physical therapist.
Yep. So in the state of Texas, the state licensed acupuncturists that are trained in true traditional Chinese medicine, and then a physical therapist, athletic trainer, as an example, can take extra certification courses because we already have the college background experience from anatomy, mm-hmm. physiology standpoint, extra certification courses, and permission from physicians to do it with our patient populations.
There you go. Perfect. So to the average listener that is trying to run a marathon and doesn't have the background, they think they have shin splints or something else going on. How do they go about, you know, seeking treatment? Can they go straight to the doctor? Can they go straight to a physical therapist? You know, most of them probably don't know what an athletic trainer is. You know, where do they seek that and how do they get to that treatment and how can they ask for this?
Yep. So in the state of Texas too, a licensed massage therapist could provide the cupping therapy and a lot of the manual techniques that I mentioned before. They're not allowed to do acupuncture or traditional, mm-hmm. the trigger point dry needling. In the state of Texas, a physical therapist, we now have direct access. So a patient can refer themselves to see a physical therapist. They can do the initial evaluation and treat for a certain length of time. And then they have to get permission from a physician. Most work closely with some, so it kind of helps facilitate that process. And then an athletic trainer typically is associated with an athletics program. So a lot of our high schools here in the state, middle schools even, college programs, but even some sports med PT rehab clinics, some chiropractors have athletic trainers that will do the exercise mm-hmm. portion within their clinics. A lot of chiropractors in the state of Texas would also do trigger point dry needling. So there's a bunch of different avenues to kind of like be that jumping off spot.
Excellent. And a question that comes up with our listeners quite a bit, and I think it might be something that you could easily speak to, is what is an athletic trainer and how does it differ from like a personal trainer?
That's an excellent question. It tends to be a hot topic for the certified athletic trainers. So a certified athletic trainer now is required entry level to have a master's degree, and they're trained in emergency medicine. I think that's one of the mm-hmm. biggest things that is hugely different than a personal trainer. So a personal trainer might help you design a personal training program, but to be a trainer, all that you may have had is a weekend mm-hmm. certification course. It doesn't mean that you've had semester-long anatomy, physiology, emergency medicine, rehab, modalities, like those types of courses. And so that's what an athletic trainer has. Plus, they've had to pass a board exam, a national board exam. Our student athletic trainers are going through that process this week. And so they're all a little frazzled. So it's a large test that they have to take and pass. Once they pass that national board exam, then they get licensed in their each individual state, and it's a regulated healthcare provider. And so each state licenses or registers those individuals to provide a medical care.
That's excellent. Thank you so much, because we get that question a lot. People think, oh, I'll just go see a personal trainer, but it's actually, there's quite a bit more involved with an athletic trainer. And
yep. And you'll often hear, if you're watching an NFL game, they'll say, hey, the trainers are out there taking a look at them, or the trainer saved DeMar Hamlin's life. Mm-hmm. But those are athletic trainers that go through that educational process. And again, trained in those emergency management techniques. They're skilled at evaluating acute and chronic injuries and then building a treatment plan, rehab plan for those.
Awesome. And they're considered part of sports medicine. Yep. So they work very closely with the physicians right. and the physical therapists themselves as well.
Yep. And so in a way too, they're global in their reach in terms of being able to evaluate, treat, and then refer if needed. And so they have a larger skill set than a lot of other professions, just because they know at least a little bit about a whole lot of areas to be able to make those decisions.
That's awesome. I just read an article about research being a surfer or a diver, surfer being, you know, a whole lot about right. you know, wide range in a diver, you go down yeah. deep into one thing, and every profession seems to, or treatment needs that, right?
Right. Absolutely.
Medicine needs that. All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Walters. We really appreciate you being here today. We always ask our guests if they have anything they want to leave with our listeners.
I think the biggest thing is for any sort of like recovery type situation, whether it's from you're working out and you just want to find a way to recover to help improve your next bout of exercise, or if you're actually dealing with an injury, kind of play around with different types of modalities, whether that's heat, cold, contrast between the two, moving back and forth, or cupping, massage, kind of play around with different strategies and just see which works best for you and kind of run with it.
Nice. Thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And for our listeners at home, if you have any comments that you'd like to share with us, please send them to huffines@tamu.edu. That's TAMU.edu. We also want to hear from you if you have topics that you're interested in hearing about. We've gotten a few emails lately asking for some different topics, and we really appreciate that. We want to make sure that we're covering things that you're interested in. So for that, stay healthy, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.
Thank you.
We Do the Heavy Lifting would like to send thanks to Dr. Jenna Yentes, our host, this week's guest, Dr. Sherry Walters, Tex Ags for a recording studio, Anisha Patel as executive producer, and Dell Billings for opening and closing credits.